This morning, we study a passage from the book of Matthew. It's printed on the back of your bulletin, and you can read it in your pew Bible on page 25. This passage comes after religious authorities ask Jesus tough theological questions, and he amazes them with provocative answers. Matthew 22, verses 34 through 40. When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together, and one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question to test him. "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" He said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets."
The scripture that we are reflecting on this morning is how Jesus distills all of the law, all of the teachings of our faith. Love God and love your neighbor as yourself. Hillel the elder was a rabbi living when Jesus lived. They might have even met each other. A Gentile, someone who was not Jewish, told Hillel the elder, "I'll convert to Judaism if you can recite the whole Torah standing on one foot." Before TV, entertainment came in public spaces through conversation and challenge. Remember all those stories of people taking Jesus on? The Pharisees, the Sadducees, bystanders challenged Jesus with tough questions. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? This woman has had seven husbands. They've all died. Who will she be married to in heaven? Should we pay taxes to the empire or not? These conversations happen in public spaces as Jesus and his friends stand around like kids on a playground or teenagers at the mall or adults in coffee shops or bars. We like public spaces where we can be with some people we know and some people we don't know yet. Pleasant familiarity and exciting novelty in just the right blend. When Jesus and his friends hang out like this, they meet that rich young man who wants to follow Jesus but can't give up his possessions. They meet the woman about to be stoned. Hillel the elder met someone ready to convert to Judaism if he could simply recite the Torah standing on one foot. And Hillel the elder couldn't pass up this opportunity. He picked up his foot and said, "What is hateful to you, do not do to another." That is the whole Torah. The rest is explanation. Go and learn. The golden rule shows up in every religion. It's in Leviticus, which Jews, Christians, and Muslims all read. It's in Leviticus at least twice. Forget about the wrong things people do to you and do not try to get even. Love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love foreigners as you love yourselves because you were foreigners in Egypt. Jesus agrees with Hillel the elder's summary of the law. Do to others what you want them to do to you. This is the meaning of the law of Moses and the teaching of the prophets. Or in Luke, do to others what you would want them to do to you. In the Hadith, a collection of Muhammad's sayings, that which you want for yourself, seek for all people. And apparently bystanders provoked Muhammad like they did Jesus. One story says, a Bedouin came to the prophet, grabbed the stirrup of his camel and said, "Oh, the messenger of God, teach me something to go to heaven with." Muhammad said, "As you would have people do to you, do to them. And what you dislike to be done to you, don't do to them. Now let the stirrup go." He went on to say, "This maxim is enough for you. Go and act in accordance with it." The golden rule lives beyond these three Abrahamic faiths. There was a video I was going to show you, and I was just about to reference it, but I didn't want us to run out of time today. But let me tell you quickly that the Buddha, Siddhartha Gautama, lived after all those events in Leviticus, but centuries before Jesus, and the golden rule was central to his teachings. Do not hurt others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. He also says, comparing oneself to others in such terms as, just as I am, so are they, just as they are, so am I, one should neither kill nor cause others to kill. Earlier, Confucius taught the same. Is there any one word that could guide a person throughout life? Confucius said, how about reciprocity? Never impose on others what you would not choose for yourself. In Taoism, regard your neighbor's gain as your own gain and your neighbor's loss as your own loss. This nine-pointed star is the symbol for the Baha'i faith, which embraces all religions as worthy, seeking unity. It's like Unitarian Universalism, but instead of emerging out of Christianity, it emerged out of Islam. And its prophet Baha'u'llah said, if your eyes turn toward justice, choose for your neighbor that which you choose for yourself. Ascribe not to any soul that which you would not have ascribed to yourself. Some people say this last one is a version of the silver rule because it's phrased or framed in the negative. Don't do to others what you would not have others do to you. Or as Hillel the Elder said, what is hateful to you, do not do to another. Or Buddha, do not hurt others in ways you would find hurtful. Silver isn't quite as valuable as gold, humans decided. So that negative phrasing of the rule isn't quite as good as the positive phrasing. Jesus struck gold, as recorded in the book of Luke, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So there's that little dynamic, the gold or the silver. But here's the real controversy, the platinum rule. Do unto others as they would have you do unto them. Platinum is even better than gold, some humans decided. And criticism of the golden rule is at least as old as Nietzsche and Kant, 19th century German philosophers, who argued that we really can't know how other people want to be treated. That golden rule might just be a gold-plated rule. Say we're exchanging Christmas presents, and we all want to follow the golden rule, doing unto others as we would have them do unto us, we bring something that we would want to be given. So you'll go home with the book that I've been wanting to read, and I'll take home classy candlesticks that I'm not going to use. We have different tastes. We want different things, golden rule or gold-plated. But Jesus and all of those teachers didn't say, assume everyone is just like you and try to please them. Do to others as you would have them do to you doesn't mean give everybody else your favorite kind of candy, but seek to care for others as you would want to be cared for. Seek to please others because you want to be pleased. The golden rule doesn't say you know how to please people. You still have to ask. Gift exchanges are a tangible but pretty trite example of the golden or platinum rule. Social and cultural dynamics are more useful and more complicated to consider. So imagine our Halloween party next Sunday evening. If you ended up standing alone by the cider, do you want someone to come over and strike up a conversation with you? Or is it a welcome moment of peace? I would not want to be alone at a party. I would feel out of place if I wasn't talking to somebody. I'm an extrovert. And honestly, because I'm your pastor, at church events, I feel like it's my role to make sure that everyone is included. So if I use the golden rule, I would assume that anybody standing alone by the cider needs me to come talk to them. But some of you might be introverts, and you might be glad for a break from conversation. So then when I come up to chat, you think, oh, can't I get some peace? So platinum starts to sound better than gold. But how well do we know each other? And how well do we know ourselves? Can you already predict what mood you will be in next Sunday? If you'll even be there? If you're going to be in costume and what Jim Ake is going to wear? My sister and I are really different. We share most of our values, but our personalities are really opposite. And we can hurt each other's feelings in ways that maybe only siblings or intimate partners can. It just takes a glance or a tone. I used to try to talk with her about our dynamics. I don't like those vulnerable conversations, but I loathe even more not talking about what's bothering us. But she would just walk out of the room. When I was learning to knit, it was time to try my first pair of socks. Socks are tough. They require undoing and redoing. They can be quite tedious. After all that work, just a pair of socks. But I did finish them with help from a friend, and I decided I would give them to my sister. I wrote her a letter about how hard it was to knit those socks, but how satisfying it was too. And I wrote that our relationship was like knitting socks. Hard, I make mistakes, I have to keep trying, but it's worth it. I was so proud of myself. I was applying the platinum rule. I thought I'd figured out the right way to connect with her based on her needs and her comfort. She doesn't like the intensity of talking in person in the moment, so a letter that she could read anytime and write back to whenever she wanted seemed like the right approach for her. She looked at the letter after she opened the socks. She said she'd read it later. She never mentioned it again. Platinum rule fail? Did I misunderstand how to treat her as she would want to be treated? Now, a few years after all of this, she was giving me the silent treatment during a family gathering. My heart was breaking with how much I cannot stand not dealing with a rupture in relationship. So I broke down and I texted her from a different room in the same house. There were 10 other people around. And I didn't text her because it was the best platinum rule plan. Now, texting is better than talking face to face for my introverted sister. But mostly I texted her because my heart was aching and I had to give words to that stone in my stomach. She wrote back right away. And we messaged each other back and forth a few times from different rooms in the same house. And a couple hours later, she started talking to me like nothing had happened. Now, when we lived in India as kids, we met people who practiced the Jain religion. They carry hand brooms and they brush the ants or any bugs from their path before they step on them. They wear face masks to keep from swallowing any gnats. They eat a vegan diet and try to never kill any living creature. The Jain religion has the golden rule. Is sorrow or pain desirable to you? If you say yes, it is, it would be a lie. If you say no, it is not, you speak truth. Just as sorrow or pain is not desirable to you, so it is to all which breathe, exist, live, or have any essence of life. To you and all, it is undesirable and painful and repugnant. The golden rule turns out to be more valuable to me than the platinum rule. The platinum rule seems to be an expression of postmodern political correctness, which I generally like. Everyone is unique and needs to be respected in their differences. I agree with that heartily, but I believe that our common humanity is more important than our uniqueness. The 19th century German philosopher Immanuel Kant was one of the first critics of the Golden Rule, saying that we can't expect to know what other people need and want. And Kant believed a purely rational, secular set of rules could determine completely moral behavior. He developed the categorical imperative. Those are kind of big words, but basically just that that's an imperative, it's an absolute, clear truth. And it has three formulations. The first is, act only according to that maxim whereby you can at the same time will that it should become a universal law. Even the English translations of Kant use really big words. But actually, what he's saying is exactly what we read in our Young People Gathering Time book. What if everybody did that? That is the first formulation of the categorical imperative. What if everybody did that? Kant might have thought that the golden rule was merely gold-plated, but I think his categorical imperative actually supports the golden rule's universality, because what if everybody did that is an equalizing question. We are each unique, yet we are also made in God's image, and that common spirit of God flowing within and among us is deeper than culture, and it's deeper than personality. That's not an excuse to assume that everyone is like us. It's a challenge to get in touch with that of God within each other and within ourselves. Because if we're really following the golden rule, we have to dig into ourselves. We have to build our emotional intelligence and our self-awareness. Like the Jains say, is sorrow or pain desirable to you? If you say yes, it is, it would be a lie. Sounds obvious, right? But it's usually not that simple. When I knit a pair of socks and felt inspired to write my sister a letter about how hard I had worked, I believed I was trying to make both of us happier and more comfortable. I intended that, but I was overthinking it. I was probably actually having more fun with the metaphor of the socks than I should have been. I was over-determining our feelings and our reactions. I wasn't really following the golden rule because I wasn't treating either of us as we most deeply wanted to be treated. Years later, when I just texted her from another room, I was acting more honestly out of my pain, out of a desire to be out of that pain. And I believe it was my sincerity that she most needed to experience, and that's why she texted me back. David Radcliffe preached at our district conference this weekend. He's preached at Stone, so some of you probably know him. He's the director of the New Community Project, which gets good church folks like us to be more honest and aware of our global community and what kind of neighbors we are. He told a story about a rich man visiting a village in South Sudan. He saw the children sitting on the ground, singing hymns and praying, and he decided this village needs a church. So he gave them $10,000 to build a church. And now it's the sturdiest building in the village. David visited this village. He saw the church and asked the people, what would you have done with the $10,000 if he had asked you? And they said, we would build dormitories. Because praying and singing hymns under a tree outside is all right, but sleeping and living in shacks is a hardship. Proof that we need the platinum rule? I don't think it has to be. I think if that rich man had lived in the village for a week, he would also have preferred to sleep in a sturdy building for 8 or so hours a night in the dark when creatures are roaming about. And then he would be fine praying and singing outside during the day. The golden rule is only gold-plated if we're out of touch with our own needs, if we're out of touch with reality, if we're jumping to conclusions based on our ego or our status or what we perceive our role to be. If I'm so focused on being your pastor that I ask you personal questions standing next to the cider at the Halloween party next week, and you just want to be playing a game and not thinking about your spiritual angst, then I'm putting my role before either of our sincere needs. If a rich Christian visits a village in South Sudan and knows he wants to help, but can't see past the status of a church building, he's putting perception before reality. The golden rule isn't just good for other people. It saves us too, because we find out who we are and what we most deeply long for when we practice the golden rule. For some of us, caring for other people is easier than caring for ourselves. And the golden rule doesn't say either others or us. Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, we have to love ourselves too. Not narcissism, not selfishness, that's not love. What do you say to yourself when you're late again for work or picking up your kids? What do you say to yourself when you can't zip up your jeans? What do you say to yourself when you choose a movie over meditating? Or when you realize you can't climb the stairs anymore? Now think about someone you adore. Maybe a grandchild or a child, maybe it's even your pet, someone that you adore and you would never want to hurt. Would you ever talk to them the way that you talk to yourself? One final story by Jennifer McBride about sleeping rough during Holy Week. She writes, "The practice draws the housed into a more embodied understanding of homelessness, in turn increasing our capacity for lament and for constructive acts of hope. The homeless and the housed have divergent relationships to space, a realization that becomes clear my first time on the streets. A group of us are sleeping behind Trinity United Methodist Church for a few hours until we are all awakened at 3 a.m. by a great gush of wind that seconds later brings with it lightning, thunder, and a torrential downpour. We knew there was a possibility of a thunderstorm, and before going to sleep, we took notice of the parking garage across the way. As the wind howls and the rain begins, Kiana and I quickly gather our things, and with skull caps on our heads and cardboard tucked under our arms, we take off toward the well-lit garage. As two homeless men sleeping yards away from us bolt into the darkness in the other direction. We arrive as a security guard behind glass jumps out of his seat and, assuming we are homeless, frantically waves his arms and says, "No, no, no, you can't be here." To which Kiana responds instinctively and with a tone that conveys the obviousness of the situation, "But there's lightning and it's pouring down rain. Please, may we stand here?" I plead, in a tone that, like Kiana's, demands basic human decency. Just until the storm passes? With a deeply confused look on his face, as if he is now noticing that we are not homeless and yet knows that we had been sleeping by the church, the attendant sits back down without explicitly giving us permission, but nevertheless allows us to stay. As the rest of our group makes their way to the garage, Kiana and I stand there processing what has just happened. To the attendant, we undoubtedly looked homeless as we slept by the church and then raced across the concrete with our dark clothes and cardboard in hand. But perhaps upon arrival in our encounter with him, we did not have the presence of those who are homeless. For instead of hiding from police and security lest we wind up in jail, we had a basic sense of claim to that parking garage. It was raining and we needed shelter, simple as that. What I take from that experience is the different relationship that those who are housed and those who are homeless have to space. For the housed, there is some basic sense of belonging, a basic sense of a right to be somewhere. For the homeless, there is experience after experience of exclusion, with the clear message that they do not have that same right simply to exist somewhere, to know that those no loitering signs apply to you. I've never thought that of myself. I think our hearts are designed to break and to bloom wide open. Following the platinum rule should lead us to want shelter for the homeless. It should. But following the golden rule broke Jennifer's heart open to the homeless because she learned to love them as she would love herself and now wants more deeply than ever before shelter. Consider the rose. See how God designs its petals to each unfold, touched by the sun's warm rays. Consider your heart. See how God designs it to unfold, touched by God's great mercy, petals of compassion, forgiveness, gratitude. With the touch of love, our hearts bloom. We learn to love ourselves by loving our neighbor well, by hearing the gentle words that we use for our grandchildren or our pets or a friend who is in pain. We learn to love our neighbor when we sleep a night on their street corner. Love God with everything you've got. Let God be God and adore our Creator. Love your neighbor as yourself. A holy trinity, three in one. Love God, love neighbor, love self. The greatest commandments are better than gold. Amen.